Welcome to episode 16 of Spam, Spam, Spam Humbug. You've got three of us actually this week, which is really nice. You've got myself with Stan the Fury Dragon. Of course, I run the Ultima Codex. You've also got Linguistic Dragon joining us again.
Hello, I am Linguistic Dragon, author of the Ultima Journeys blog.
And we are also joined tonight, we haven't seen him in a little while, by Sanctimonia.
Hello, I'm back. Believe it or not, I am the creator of Sanctimonia, an MMO, and Sylph, a shoot 'em up.
That's right. I think I actually publicized the last alpha, but you did a little bit. I saw a couple of things from you on Twitter that I'm going to have to take a look at and post at some point if I can actually find time.
Yeah, I actually recently began streaming live development sessions on Twitch, so if you're the most masochistic person on the planet, you might be interested in watching.
Well, all right then. That's what it was. Yes, I remember that now, live development. All right. So, this episode, From Aera to Here, and that's, I've heard a lot of interesting pronunciations of that particular word.
It's all those vowels.
You know what? Yeah, exactly. You know, the origin of that word, okay, so back in, and I totally like, well, it's not really a backronym because it's not an acronym, but you'll see what I mean. Flashback to, I gotta think this through here. It was the year the first iPod came out, I'll tell you that much, because I bought one. Because I had landed a job at a water treatment facility, part of my student career, and so I treated myself to an iPod. And at the same time, I also got embroiled in Nation States, which was I don't know if it even still exists. I haven't checked in forever.
Fairly sure it does.
But I got embroiled in it, and it's like its first incarnation. And that was part of the name of the nation that I cooked up for myself. And honestly, I didn't actually know that it was a real word. I was totally basing it off of Ayer, the Protoss homeworld. So, yeah. I learned some years later that it is actually part of a phrase, I believe, in Portuguese, which means suspension. You know, like on a current of air or something like that. And you know what? That kind of worked in a certain roundabout way, preserving, suspending Ultima, you know, holding it up to some degree. But, you know, I can't say that I went with that word because that's what it meant. I didn't find that out until many years later. But that's where it came from. And so I held on to that name long after I was off Nation States. And, you know, the first incarnation of Ultima Aera went live. It was, what, August 2004, August 9th, 2004. So this episode is actually going to wind up observing that anniversary a couple of days early. But that's okay. Really, it's the sites. I mean, now obviously I don't use Aera anymore. I still own the domain, and I'm slowly retiring it. I've been slowly retiring it since 2012. You know, shows you how much time I have. And at some point, I'll let it go entirely in favor of the Codex, which, of course, you know, went live in 2012. But, you know, when Aera started, what was it? It was basically just a mirror of Voyager Dragon's Ultima, the Reconstruction, which was just an archive site, primarily an archive site, for the Ultima fan projects that were active at the time. And, you know, that was right around the time, I think, too, that Voyager was having some trouble keeping things up to date. So I'm just like, well, you know what? We should mirror this stuff anyways, because it's always good to have backups. And I would occasionally post news, not too terribly often. you know, just, oh yeah, this project has done this thing, they've released this thing happened, not terribly much going on there. And then I was involved in some other stuff. I mean, I was going through school at the time. I was working to put myself through school at the time. So it's not like I had a ton of time to devote to the site. And I was involved in some other projects online anyways. And then about 2008, so, you know, 4 years-ish later, I thought, you know, I can do more with this site. There's more that can be done here. Of course, at the time, I was already married. I already had a kid on the way. So I didn't realize, you know, I wasn't going to have quite as much time as I'd had previously. I still had a fair bit. I was still able to find a fair bit of time to, you know, work on it. And part of that was a function of, you know, where I worked and how I got to work. Part of that was just a function of one baby is easier to manage than three not babies. So that is a very, very basic history. Around about 2008, I basically just started saying, well, you know what? I can do more with this. I wonder what Richard Garriott's been up to. Well, it turns out that, you know, he'd been to space and sued NCSoft. And, oh, yeah, there was that whole MMO that he built at NCSoft first. And then that had failed. And then it's just like, wow, okay, there's a lot that's been happening. And then, you know, just started posting other news about this stuff. And it somehow took off. And I remember shortly after August 9th of 2010, was, I think, the first indication I had that the Codex, well, IERA at the time, had become something. Because that was when, it was August 13th, 2010, I was told just an insanely interesting thing, which was basically, I mean, oh, did we just lose Jordan? Nope, okay, there we go. August 13th, 2010, a port of Akalabeth had just been released for the iPhone. Well, iOS in general, iPhone, iPad. And I've been, that was just after I'd really started building contact with Mythic Entertainment, as they were known then. They're the ones, you know, they were at the time shepherding the Ultima namesake, you know, working on Ultima Online primarily. And that was when Paul Barnett, you know, mentioned that they'd really be interested in taking a look at anybody who could successfully port Ultima 4, especially, to the iOS platform. Of course, it wasn't quite as simple as that. I mean, getting XU, I think there was an attempt actually to get XU4 up and running on an iPhone. And I think that actually made a fair bit of progress. But, of course, it's not as simple as that because, you know, a lot of these fan projects are released under, well, the GPL, which is fine for a free fan-developed work, sure, but historically has been very problematic to release apps on iOS that have GPL content in them. And EA themselves won't touch it at all. So, unfortunately, with one little exception, I mean, they did do a thing where the where they ported the Commodore 64 version of Ultima 4 to iOS. That came some years later.
Just to chime in real quick with respect to the GPL, the reason and my understanding that a lot of companies are hesitant to take existing GPL code, modify it, and release it, despite the GPL being an extremely permissive license, that freely allows commercial use of anything licensed under it, whether or not you, in fact, even created it yourself. You could have added one line of code or no lines of code and still release a GPL program and sell it commercially without restriction. The main reason is, I think, because a lot of companies want to, as they say, have their cake and eat it too. They would actually like to take a GPL program created by someone else, modify it, and release it as closed source. So add something to it and say, we're going to release this, but we're not going to disclose the actual changes we made to it, or even the original code itself that we started from, which of course is in violation of it. It violates the actual spirit of it, which is to have free software for everyone to use, modify, distribute as they please. So, you know, obviously a company just trying to make money that doesn't want to disclose its source code or any of its trade secrets would be adverse to having to comply with those sorts of terms.
Yeah, and I mean, I can see actually, you know, why some companies would be averse to that, because, you know, nowadays especially, right, we're in the era of, you know, well, like, I mean, EA, like if you pick up and play an EA mobile title, some of them actually link up with your Origin profile, some of them have cross connections to your other social media profiles, so there is actually in those games, there's a lot of, you know, internal code, or a lot of code that, you know, deals with sort of internals to the EA system, if you will, right? And I can understand why there'd be a desire to protect that. But at the same time, I mean, the point is it made a hash of it, right? So there were a couple of really promising attempts, but it necessarily never went anywhere, unfortunately. But they were very interested in it, and it was around this time in 2010 that really started to become a thing. And that was about the first indication I think I had that the Codex, or IERA, was problematic. Or, sorry, not problematic. Problematic. Linguistic. I got confused.
I have a way of doing that.
Yes, Linguistic just chimed in chat that he's having some connection issues, which I hope is not related to our use of Zencastr, because I'm really hoping that that'll be a promising tech for delivering future podcasts. But, you know, if it is, it's something we'll have to keep in mind. But anyways, if we lose Linguistic, he apologizes in advance.
Sorry.
All right. So, yeah, 2010, that's about when I started to get the inkling that, you know, okay, the Codex is starting to become something. IERA is starting to become something. And then it took about another year before I really got around to thinking, you know, I want it to be something. And it was actually for the anniversary, the birthday in 2011, that I launched the Digital Lyceum. It was something that I'd wanted to set up for a while. It was something I'd actually discussed setting up for a while. The thought was that, you know, it's one thing, was my thinking at the time, it's one thing to host projects and offer space to would-be fan project developers who are in need of a website, but the hardest part of making an Ultima project isn't necessarily making it known or socializing it to the wider internet. It's actually making the Ultima fan project and all that entails. And the Lyceum was a first attempt at addressing that. Now, unfortunately, at the time, it didn't really go anywhere. And I think part of that was the fact that, you know, it was too freeform. The idea was that, you know, people could build assets, submit them to the Lyceum, and then if other fan projects, you know, needed them, they could pull them down and make use of them. It's really, really great, but it's also very... It was one of those things that, you know, my hope was that, you know, because over the years, a lot of fan projects had developed a lot of stuff, artwork, music, 2D and 3D graphical assets. And, you know, my hope had been that with the Lyceum, you know, people could come together and just pool resources, but there was no real structure to it. It was just like, oh, hey, I have a thing, here it is. A few people did submit stuff, and that was cool. But it certainly didn't take off the way I'd hoped. Now, that said, Browncoat Jason, has really, over the last couple of years, kind of taken that and made it his own. And rather than it being a repository in the strictest sense, it's become more of a lyceum in the classic sense. You know, he really is very good about keeping up to date with news about, you know, various 3D engines that are available, some training materials related to them. So, you know, it's more a really decent resource if you want to read up on some of the extant technologies that exist for building a game.
I would like to add to that quickly that I think one of the greatest strengths of the Codex in more recent years is the fact that you've sort of delegated responsibility for certain areas to different people. So, you know, instead of it being a one-man project, you know, for example, Golem Dragon covers much of the news for Shroud of the Avatar, you know, and of course, as you just mentioned, Browncoat Jason is pretty much outside of contributor solely responsible for maintaining the Lyceum, which was an extremely smart move because one man only has so much time. So I think that's a very important decision.
And then dwindling amounts of it, too. We'll get to that. Yeah, no, I mean, you mentioned Browncoat and you mentioned Golem, and yeah, very different. You know, it was almost Golem, you know, explicitly reached out to me and volunteered to help with the Shroud of the Avatar news, and of course I was only too happy to accept. Browncoat did it very just all of a sudden, just dived right in. I mean, I knew he had right access to the Lyceum, and then it kind of sat dormant for a little bit, and then just all of a sudden one day, I started getting, you know, favorite notifications on Twitter, because of course all the Codex subdomains are connected to the Ad Ultima Codex, or well, no, not all of them, but stuff like the Lyceum is connected to the Ultima Codex's Twitter account and the Facebook page and a couple other things, so that anything that gets posted there, just there's automatically, you know, a little blurb and a link that gets shot out to these other services, right? And so all of a sudden I start getting like favorites notifications on my phone. It's, oh yeah, we like this tweet. Why is the Unreal Engine favoriting this tweet? I didn't write anything about the Unreal Engine. Oh, Browncoat's been up to stuff. This is really awesome. So yeah, he kind of just jumped right into it. But yeah, no, it's definitely, you know what, I guess we can talk about it a little bit. I mean, I'm kind of going chronologically, but we can talk about it because yeah, that has been, I think, one of the things that certainly helped, well, I mean, you know, I talked about this a while back. Gosh, was that on a Dragon's Meet? Maybe. I can't even remember now. But, I mean, you know, my work circumstance changed coming up on 2 years ago. And it was one of those things where, you know, I still miss working for Honeywell. You know, I still miss working with the team there, a great bunch of guys. The work was always interesting. It was nice to, you know, travel to, I was mostly traveling to the continental U.S., but it was nice to get around. And occasionally I'd go to further flung places, Trinidad, Saudi. But, I mean, if it was just me, I'd probably still be working there, but I have a family. I have, you know, a wife. And that would mean leaving her at home with the kids. I have children, not all of whom really handled well my being absent for these work trips, which would sometimes be, you know, often be a week in duration, sometimes 2 weeks, 3 weeks occasionally, spending, you know, up to 25% of my year abroad. And so, you know, though I dearly miss it, it was definitely a thing that had to change because it just, it was not worth, especially my oldest, you know, was really taking, she takes it hard now when my wife goes out for a shift. I mean, it's, you know, me being away for a week, there's just destroy her. So the change had to happen. And, you know, in a lot of ways, the change was good. I mean, we're certainly overall better off as a result of me taking on this new gig, this new job. I say new, but I'm almost 2 years into it now.
it's all relative anyway.
But I think for me, the hardest thing about making that switch was losing my commute, or rather losing the fact that I didn't drive on my commute. Because when I worked at Honeywell, you know, there in downtown Edmonton, all I had to do was walk to the end of my block, and I could hop on my bus, and the area bus that, you know, because like I live outside of Edmonton, right? So the bus that would kind of feed through the communities and collect people and then take them to the main transit center would then turn into the commuter bus that would head into downtown Edmonton. So literally, I just walked on my block, I hop on the bus, and I have 45 minutes to an hour depending on traffic. And same thing coming home. I walk a couple blocks out of my office, I hop on a bus, and I have 45 minutes to an hour depending on traffic, and it drops me, you know, just down the block from my house. So this was great. I had 90 to 120 minutes a day where I could stay on top of the news feeds. I could stay on top of, you know, messages from people. I could draft a whole bunch of posts and make sure that it was all getting up to the site. And, you know, taking this new job, I don't have that option. I actually have to drive to the new office. So, you know, I lost up to 10 hours out of my week that I could otherwise devote to the Codex. And
well, the good news is if you can find an adequate excuse, you could possibly make that back up.
And how would that be?
Just every day say, honey, I need to go clean the basement, and you'll actually go down and nerd out, you know, on Ultima.
Well, you know, the apart from, you know, needful things like vacuuming, the main cleaning that needs to happen in the basement, because, like, I'm in, you know, like, my office is just in the furnace room, right? Like, there's not much to it. But the main room of the basement is the kids' playroom, and you can't see it through all that junk behind me. But, you know, like, it's just a big open area, and there's tons of the kids' toys. There's also, like, a TV and some couches for, you know, when we have friends over. But, you know, so cleaning up the basement just basically involves putting the Duplos back in their box and the Mega Bloks back in their box and those other toys back in that shelf over there and things like that. It's pretty obvious when that does and doesn't happen. One other thing that was interesting in, sorry, I guess I should wrap that up before I completely wander away from topic. But anyways, you know, that's been the latest struggle, is just figuring out how to stay on top of the news. Because, you know, I made this point to Linguistic an episode or two ago, which was that, you know, for a game series that hasn't had a published single-player entry in coming up on 16 years, yep. You know, which has, you know, its lasting namesake is an MMO, which is, you know, I mean, Ultima Online is, you know, it's the grandfather of MMOs. It's, you know, no one's going to deny its influence on the industry. But at the same time, I mean, if there's 100,000 subscribers, I'd be surprised, right? So, you know, in terms of its prominence nowadays, you know, based on things like subscribership or whatever, there's not much there. There was Ultima Forever. I'll mention that a little bit more later on, but of course that didn't go very much or go very far.
You know, you mentioned, you know, the importance or significance of Ultima Online based on its subscribership as the metric. And similarly to what we were talking about earlier with respect to, you know, one of the greatest strengths and really triumphs of the Ultima Codex, or Ultima Ira, as it's apparently correctly pronounced, is longevity. So, you know, the problem with a lot of projects, a lot of games, particularly amongst AAA studios and modern games, and they could sell hundreds of thousands of copies, and from the perspective of their investors, they actually consider that a failure. Because they set the bar so high, they invest so heavily in it, that even though the game could be, by any normal human standards, popular, they consider it a failure. So, you know, the very fact that Ultima Online is not a charity, we have to assume that they are making money. It seems to me that they found a successful formula, and that their overhead for running and maintaining the game is low enough that despite, compared to, you know, an MMO that they spent $500,000 on, or probably $500 million, I'm not sure how much, like
I'm
Destiny.
I'm build an MMO for $500K.
Destiny,
Destiny was about $500 million.
Okay, there we go, a few orders of magnitude off, but, you know, it looks like they found a successful formula that they can, in fact, even with a, what would be considered a low subscriber base, actually make money and continue to run the project. So in many ways, I think Ultima Online, even financially, has been a long-term success, and that's why it still exists.
Oh, yeah, totally. No, I don't disagree with you there. I mean, obviously, you know, they're making money keeping it going. And I think part of that is that, you know, it still continues to offer sort of this almost, you know, I think basically unique experience. There may be like one or two other games that really come close to it, but most MMOs follow sort of that EverQuest WoW model. And, you know, I mean, that's fine for what it is. I've never been in way, shape, or form. You know, Ultima Forever was as MMO as I got. I played the Old Republic, Star Wars The Old Republic, but only because it's still got that BioWare story component, and I like Star Wars and hitting things with lightsabers. You know, and it's
well,
nice.
That, really?
You know, it's nice that I can have it. Honestly, the thing I like most about the Old Republic now is the fact that, you know, my wife plays it with me, right? So I can have that. You know, we're just going through the story, but you know, it's fun that she's there too. But we are just playing it for the story. You know, the side content that's all like the group focus stuff, it doesn't even exist for me. Heck, I even turn off like the captions above people's heads so that the other players running around, I can just think of them as NPCs.
That's actually the way it should be. Nothing like text over someone's head to break immersion.
Yes, that's my big thing. So yeah, that all just gets shut off. And then I just have to, you know, try and, okay, what's my wife's character wearing? But anyways. But anyways, the point I was building towards there was that, you know, despite the fact that all that's really left of Ultima is this small but influential MMO, there's still more stuff happening on a daily basis than I have the ability to write content for. You know, there's still more news to cover than I can cover in a day. And that's impressive. You know, if you talk about staying power, you talk about, you know, that lasting legacy, and that is, to my mind, that's it. Because, you know, like, that is... I'm almost at a loss for words there, right? Because, you know, what other series, 16 years out of major publication, apart from maybe King's Quest, can command that sort of... And even then, I mean, come on, like, you know, I think King's Quest is only a reasonably present in mind example because they went and made another one.
Yeah, not to get too far off subject or to produce too insane of an analogy, but there was an event
this
that
podcast?
Yeah, I know, right? That would be unheard of, especially coming from me. But that was an there was an event that happened approximately 2,000 years ago, after which there has been absolutely zero, arguably, activity that also left it a lasting impression on people that still very much influences things today across the board. And I guess my point is that, you know, when something happens, it doesn't matter how long ago it happens, if it's a powerful enough event, the ripples it creates in time and its repercussions will be felt throughout the ages.
You're not wrong. And I mean, I think, you know, especially because we're dealing with Ultima here, right? And if you want to play, you know, if you want to put the digital archaeologist hat on for a minute, I mean, you're talking about a series that... Well, you know, both Final Fantasy and Dragon Quest took cues from Ultima 3. So heavy contribution to, you know, the legacy of JRPGs. Ultima 4, obviously widely regarded as influential in inspiring, you know, the Western RPG motifs. Actually, Ultima 4, 5, 6, 7, they all, like, you can all see, you know, the lines of influence coming off of those games. Yeah, definitely. I mean, this is definitely, you know, it's not like this was just some series come late. Like, this was a highly influential series, definitely. But it's cool that, you know, 16 years on, and then after, you know, an entry in the series that nobody can agree on.
Would that be Ultima 8 or Ultima 9 or Ultima Forever?
Yes.
Or the web-based whatever real-time strategy Lords of Ultima?
So anyways, we'll just say yes to that. And yes, Linguistic had it right there. We'll just yes. But yeah, I mean, you know, and the fans are still doing stuff, you know? I've got like 10 links that I still have to put together, and the reason I haven't yet is because, you know, it takes me longer when there's downloads involved, when I have to make updates to the downloads or project entries. But, you know, like Sir John, he's got like 10 pieces of news regarding his German translations of Ultima 6 and the Ultima 6 project vis-a-vis Dungeon Siege. He's working on the German translation of Dungeon Siege.
Right.
Or a German translation of Dungeon. It's you know, like, there's that, or the Exodus Project, just there was some news for them, or, gosh, I should pull up Quip and just start reading off stuff, because, you know, I've still got about 30 bullet points in Quip that I got to sort through, so that's cool, and, anyways, okay, where were we? 2011, we were in 2011, 2011 was also kind of an interesting year, because that was... And that was kind of the other thing that was really cool, because in addition to, you know, starting to work with Mythic and starting to, you know, not only were they coming to me with questions about the Ultima fandom and the Ultima lore, but they were also making heavy use of the wiki, you know, to get all the little bits of information that they needed to build Britannia. And then, of course, I also got to work with them with some of the GOG releases. And if you go through them, like, there's stuff that you can find on the Codex bundled as bonus content with some of those releases. I recall putting at least a few of those packages together myself, actually. So, you know, like, that was... But it was 2011 when we started seeing the Ultima games appearing on GOG. And then 2012 happened, and that was about when Ultima Aera was retired, because, well, I really couldn't resist jumping to something called the Ultima Codex. you know, I don't think that, I don't think I could have, actually passed that up. I mean, IR was neat and all, but apart from, like, you know, Joe Garrity had a couple of interesting theories about the name or his own little explanations of the name for himself, which I thought were kind of cute. But, you know, it was kind of a Ultima Codex. I mean, come on, like, this is, duh, go with it. Especially because it came to me for free, right? You know, Deckard wasn't doing anything with it, and he thought that I might be able to make something happen with it. And so that was about, you know, that happened in 2012, and seemed like a really good year. It really did.
Linguistic, when was... Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go on.
I was just going to ask... Sure, yeah, I was just going to ask Linguistic when... I know he's, from my addled memory, a bit of a newcomer to Ultima, but, you know, when was the first time that you actually found the Ultima Codex, you know, and why? You know, what were you looking for?
Well, as I recall, oh boy, when was it? I want to say it was just after the switch from Iera to Ultima Codex proper, because I only vaguely remember Iera itself. And I'm pretty sure it was sparked by seeing the Ultima games on GOG, and it had been a while since I'd last played them. It had been, probably 3 or 4 years at that point that I'd even thought about them. And I went, hey, I should pull these out again, poke through them a little more than I had last time. And
Did he blip?
Looks like it. Oh, there we go.
Blip.
Oh, he's back.
Oh, where'd I blip out?
Well, I'm still showing you his recording, so...
You're good now.
Okay, good. But yeah, I'd saw them on GOG again, picked them up, poked through them some more, was looking for more information, hit Google, and there was the codex. And, well, there I've been ever since, so here I am.
Yeah, it's... That's cool. I mean, it was one of... 2012 and 2013, I think, were really excellent years, but those were also the years where the Codex started to kind of become this monolithic thing. I don't think it really hit a crescendo until 2013, and it was kind of... I always thought, you know, 2013, and I'm just looking at, you know, what I wrote on the ninth anniversary in 2013. And, you know, like, Ultima Forever had launched the day before. Globally, it had been in open beta in a few countries for a while, and it went global on August 8th. Excuse me. And of course, a few months prior to that, Shroud of the Avatar's Kickstarter had wrapped up as well. So, you know, whereas in... You know, in 2012, the Codex was doing really well, but at least publicly, you know, Ultima was still the game of yesteryear. And then all of a sudden in 2013, that changed. It really didn't seem to be the case anymore, right? Because all of a sudden, you know, you had this new Ultima title on mobile. You had a spiritual successor helmed by Richard Garriott himself, you know, successful Kickstarter, now in development. Ultima was suddenly back, very much back and in force, in name and in spirit. Which was, you know, and that was a nice point to get to. That really was, because I can remember, you know, back in 2007, 2008, when I was undertaking to migrate the Codex, sorry, Iera, into WordPress, which of course I still continue to use today as the backbone of the site. You know, I remember some people, influential people in the community, being just like, yeah, no, like, there's nothing there, man. This is done. You know, I'm not going to follow it anymore. And that was disheartening. And then, you know, here we are now 5 years later, and it's like, well, geez, like, wow, there's suddenly a lot happening again around this stuff.
This is the point at which you begin shaming people in naming names and saying their home addresses and their phone numbers. I'm just kidding. No doxing here.
Yeah, let's not do that. And proudly admit that we didn't.
You're here.
But, you know, like, that was a really, really cool time. To, you know, and it was, even though some of it's come to a crashing halt, because, of course, Ultima Forever shut down a little over a year after that point. We'll talk about that. It was still neat to be a part of it, you know? It was still neat to have had a little hand in that, and it was still... I've said in a few different conversations, you know, when pressed, I mean, my go-to has been just like, you know what? I want more Ultima. Like, well, why are you chumming up to EA? Why are you going along with this crazy mobile thing they have in mind? Why are you bothering to report on Ultima Online, you know, on an Ultima fan project? Because I want more Ultima, damn it. There's no other or better reason than that. Thank you very much. You know, that's me.
You got a fever with Stan the Fury, and the only prescription is more Ultima.
Pretty much, especially if I can have something, you know, kind of in the flavor of Ultima 6 again. I know I'm dreaming, but whatever. It's where I'm at. I think, but, you know, like, even then, like, there was that article that was posted a little while ago talking about, you know, NPCs in Ultima 6 versus NPCs in Skyrim.
Great read.
It was a wonderful read, and it was some interesting food for thought. You know, because, and this is a point, too, that, you know, I mean, it came up talking with Bill Randolph. It's come up a few other times, too, is that, you know, if you look just at Ultima 9 and at the level of world interactivity in Ultima 9, that was huge for a 3D RPG released in 1999. And that feature set mostly went away. I mean, apart from, like, the Gothic and Risen approach to it, and even then, that wasn't the same thing at all. It was similar, but it was definitely not, you know, quite the same experience of it. The idea of a fully interactable world disappeared with the advent of 3D RPGs. Unless, you know, you were willing to do, like, the Lazarus and U6P teams and just script a game engine to its absolute breaking point, right? And it was really only about the time that Skyrim came out that, you know, a studio-produced 3D RPG met or exceeded the vision that Origin Systems were aiming for with Ultima 9 in terms of the interactivity of its world.
Yeah, not so much the actual NPC scripting, but otherwise,
well, and
yes.
And that's the point I'm building to, is the fact that, you know, and Skyrim's a pretty decent game by any respect, but even it falls short of, you know, the even higher standard established by the likes of Ultima 6 and Ultima 7 in terms of interactivity, in terms of, you know, World Sim, in terms of, and World Sim, you know, part of that comprises a really good collection of NPCs.
But on top of that, even more so, I think the most powerful difference between the two was just the humanity, the impression of humanity that you actually got from talking to the characters in Ultima 6 in particular, you know, to a degree Ultima 7, but mostly in 6, it was just so well written. The NPCs were so well written. You actually felt something, like they were real. You know, the subtext of their dialogue was incredible. And Skyrim and all the Elder Scrolls games profoundly lacked that, I think.
And even not, you know, even just, you don't even necessarily even have to talk to the NPC. Sometimes it's enough to just sit there and observe them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That just that.
Because just watch them go about their day.
Exactly. And there's just this wonderful richness of detail to that that just not even Skyrim recaptures. I don't really think there's any game, you know, post U6, U7 that fully recaptures that, that, you know, what is simultaneously a very simple and very complicated thing. It's very simple in its appearance. It's very complex in its realization in terms of, you know, the amount of scripting that had to go into it. But the impact, it is, you know, yeah, it's just, it's awesome.
I would just like to add that, you know, as far as my personal experience with Ultima Aira and the Ultima Codex, it was the first place I could actually find outside of me lurking in an ancient Usenet news group, you know, where I could actually talk about Ultima and people would, first of all, understand what the hell I was saying, and second of all, actually care. And care not just to flay me, like, you idiot, you know, what are you talking about? That's ridiculous, Sarah. You have nothing else better to do. You know, these people were actually passionate about it and could give me an intelligent, you know, response and a back and forth. And, you know, that was just such, I don't know, just really amazing experience to actually be able to find people that truly cared about not just Ultima, but about the experience that Ultima delivered, which, you know, across the board, all the games I've seen from now all the way back to the earliest, crappiest, oldest games, no other game had even come close to delivering. So it was just amazing to actually find people, you know, that truly gave a damn and understood, you know, Ultima.
Yeah, totally. And I mean, that's, I think, kind of the other thing that's been really edifying in all of this is the fact that, you know, there is this really great, really powerful community that exists around the series that's just, they will happily geek out over the tiniest little thing. Like, I mean, heck, you know, I, even something as simple as, you know, I posted a link to the last podcast episode in the Ultima Dragons Facebook group, and Dr. Cat, you know, David Shapiro, chimed in on it. And he's just like, it still makes me smile every time I see spam, 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 humbug. and he launched into, you know, just spontaneous. And, you know, a few people, like, kind of chime in. Because, you know, I mean, it's the cheat code, right, for Ultima 6. And, you know, a few people chime in. And then he's just like, oh, man, I still remember when Richard and Herman came around. And they were just like, David, what the hell is the password? You changed the password. What the heck is the password? Because I guess, you know, and he just launched into this story about how, like, you know, yeah, sure, like, when I first built it, I mean, you know, we had it because we needed it for playtesting, and we knew that we were going to keep it in the game, but at some point, you know, it was a really simple password at first, and then he got the instruction, okay, well, you know what, we're getting close to release, you better make that a much more hardier password, and to the point where, you know, Richard Garriott and Herman Miller couldn't figure out what the password was. Herman Miller actually, it gets better, okay? So Dr. Katz just spewing this up. Herman Miller actually, like, reverse engineered the game executable. And he's just like, well, I can see that it involves the word spam, and I can see that it involves the word humbug, but I don't know how many of each. So then they actually had to come and ask David Shapiro, who of course implemented that system, like, okay, seriously, what is it?
That's great.
I like though that Herman Miller is such a programmer that his first thought is not, I'm going to go ask the guy who did this. It's, I'm going to reverse engineer his code and figure out what he did.
Oh man.
Yeah, I think they call that obfuscation. It's when they actually program code to disguise things. You probably like bit shifted the entire executable and ran it through a filter looking for any sort of string that fell within A through Z. But you know, if they obfuscated it well enough, it would have been in the wrong order, or there would have been some odd conditional statement, and they would have been out of luck.
Well, you can actually find kind of a snippet of the use code and what the use code's actually looking for on the wiki, actually. There's a full transcript of Ultima 6, and it includes like all the flags within the dialogue that will work. So if you're curious what the use code's actually looking for, hit the wiki. Hit the Ultima 6 transcript and look at YOLO's dialogue.
I will do that. I'll change it to something shorter so it's not so hard to type.
Well, yeah, anyways.
Just so, spam.
Yeah. So we're... Gosh, we've already been at this for 50 minutes. Goodness. Should probably wrap it up. So I guess, you know, coming into this year, I think one of the things that, you know, I felt so darn melancholy about, and that's the reason, I think, one of the reasons that, you know, I decided to use the parting glass as the lead-in music, is the fact that, you know, coming into August last year, especially coming off of 2013, when everything seemed like, you know, like, this is, wow, Ultima's back. This is awesome. And then you come into 2014, coming into August 2014, and just this doom and gloom sense, because you know that at the end of August, or I know at the end of August, you know, that's it. Ultima Forever is gone, right? And, I mean, at least we were able to send it off with a bang. I was able to organize a Play Ultima Forever Day and just basically, you know, news blasted, as you know, just blasted it out to as many different places as I could. Just like, everybody log in to this game. We're just going to play the heck out of it on the last day. I know I did. I hold up with my phone and every, you know, I had two separate battery cases. So I just hold up in a coffee shop and I just played and played and played. I know Fenix from the wiki rented an iPad for the day. And he got in and he created a character. And we were jamming together for a good few hours. And it was great because we were both playing mages. And we both got to just like ridiculously high level. So we unlocked some of these fantastically powerful spells. And there were, of course, it's harder to get screenshots on an iPhone or an iPad. So I never actually managed to get this. But there are more than a few fights where it's just, you know, we're sweeping the room with these chain lightning bolts and, you know, like our streams are intersecting and you just feel for the poor guy in the middle because he's just hemorrhaging hit points. But it was
a lovely image.
Oh, it was sad to see the game go, but that was probably, I think, the best way that I could have gone out on it. You know, I think it was about the best way I could have sent it off. Which, you know, and I think in the end, what I liked the most about it was the fact, and what I like about, you know, any Ultima, and one of the reasons that I really desire to see more of it is that, you know, it was just nice to walk through Britannia again. Yeah. I've said, I think, enough about how, you know, Britannia was always my Narnia, and it continues to be. And it's nice to walk it once in a while.
Yeah, I have to wholly second that thought. There was no other land like Britannia. All the fantasy novels I read, you know, all the other games I've played, there was nothing that felt like home. Almost even more so than my actual home, you know, of which I've had many through the years. There was nothing that really felt like that, you know, where you're just absolutely comfortable and, you know, juxtaposed with the idea of comfortability, just the exhilaration of it being so fantastical. So it felt like home, but it was always exciting. There's no place like Britannia. And I mean that seriously.
Yeah, no, I've got to third that myself. I mean, well, Narnia was my Narnia, but Britannia is my second one. I completely geeked out when I saw a copy of Lynn Abbey's Forge of Virtue in the used bookstore the other day, because it was just an opportunity to see Britannia from another angle. So,
yeah, and, totally. And,
yeah, I wish I could just take another adventure every now and again in there.
Yeah. And I guess that kind of brings us to where we are today. And I mean, we launched it a little bit early. If I'd really been thinking, I would have deferred it until now. But, you know, and I mentioned, you know, the great failing of the Digital Lyceum was that it was far too open a framework. There was no structure to it. And so now here we are. We've just announced new Project Britannia. And, you know, that basically takes the Lyceum concept to its logical endpoint, which is basically just like, okay, you know what, here, we're going to take an engine and we're going to do whatever the heck we have to do. We're going to build whatever systems and assets we have to create the state whereby a team could take the engine, take all of the assets that we've created, and build an Ultima with it. And, you know, I suppose at some point me and the producer, you know, and the other producer are going to have the talk about how to license it. But you know what? At the end of the day, I mean, I've said a couple of times before that I really wish EA would just, you know, find a studio like Limbic Entertainment. I mean, they can't use Limbic because that's an Ubisoft studio, but, you know, a studio like that, and just let them build a classic Ultima. And you know what? If somehow we can come up with a set of systems and assets that someone could then, yeah, take Unity, take the systems, take the assets, and build an Ultima game and ship it, well, you know what? Great. That is like one of the best possible outcomes. If it makes a couple of fan projects easier to develop, that is an also really awesome outcome. You know,
I would like to suggest, if your true intent is to throw everything out the window save the fact that you'd like to see another Ultima game, to choose a BSD style license. You know, like OS X, they basically took BSD, which obviously is licensed under the BSD license. BSD is a Unix-like or Linux-like, if you will, operating system. It's the no-holds-barred license. That means not only is it a completely open, permissive license, but if you want to modify it and release it completely closed, that is permitted. So Apple's mainstay operating system actually came from BSD.
Yeah, I know.
But is not licensed that way. So that would be the most permissive license outside of public domain you could possibly choose.
Interesting. It's food for thought, but at some point we're going to have that discussion. And, I mean, again, like, it's just, however we go about that, I wouldn't want to put an obstacle in the way of a developer who actually had the Ultima IP in their hand. You know, I wouldn't want to make it so that, you know, because of a particular way that we have set up the licensing for a particular asset kit, that they can't use it. If we are, in fact, able to, you know, deliver a tightly made, like, I mean, whatever, whether it's like NPC scheduling or inventory or character creation or, you know, like any of these systems, I would, and it's probably just a pipe dream, but at the same time, I would hate to, you know, put any obstacles out there to anybody who actually had the Ultima namesake to use to take those things and run with them.
Well, as long as the content you were creating was not dependent or covered under a previous license, BSD would put up no obstacles whatsoever. It's quite the opposite.
Yeah. Well, that's something to think about then. Anyway. But yeah, like that's and you know what, that's not a bad way to mark 11 years, I think, is just, you know, trying to do something now that and trying to do something that bridges between the Ultima and the Shroud fan communities, because I think, well, I mean, you know, Aera started being all about the fan projects, and I think the Codex needs to continue to be a lot about the fan projects, and this could be this should be a good way forward for that. So at least that's what I'm hoping. But
well, as a author of a fan project, I can't help but agree.
Well, you know what? I'm going to say we call it here, because it's getting on towards an hour and it's getting late. And as I think I was mentioning earlier, I was kind of soloing it with the kids today, wife working long hours at the hospital. So to all and sundry who happen to be listening, always remember, if you'd like to recommend anyone for a shout out, and we didn't actually have shout outs this episode, did we? I don't think so. Did I'm pretty sure I gave Joss. Yes, that was last episode. I just had to make sure to mention that. So anyways, send an email to ultimacodex@gmail.com, which of course you can also use to suggest podcast topics, commentary, criticism about podcast episodes, or volunteer as a contributor. I mean, you know, the more voices, the merry. Especially because this Zencastr tech, you know, seems pretty cool, and it actually makes it really easy to do sort of, you know, multi-participant recordings. As well, if you haven't already, you should totally sign on with the Ultima Dragons group on Facebook or with the Ultima Dragons community on Google+. Facebook group's the larger of the two, but, you know, it's not everybody likes the Book of Face, and I don't blame them. There's also the UDIC hashtag on Twitter if you're on that particular service. And as well, please consider liking the Facebook page for the Ultima series, you know, following the Ultima Codex on Twitter, or encircling, I guess, the Ultima Codex on Google+. And whatever social network you favor, please also consider sharing any of the content posted to the Codex's social media profiles with your followers and friends. Spread the word, spread the Ultima. I mean, don't share everything, you know, I'm not saying please just retweet everything I do without thinking about it. But you know what? If you see something that you would consider hitting the like button for on Facebook, consider hitting the share button for it too, because it's entirely possible. You have built up you have curated your friendships for many, many years now. It's quite possible that someone else might be interested in the same thing that you are. And, yeah. You know, if someone else comes to appreciate and love Ultima for what it is, that's great. If someone comes and says, oh, hey, this new Project Britannia thing sounds cool, I want to help out with that, that's also really awesome. Ultima, and we've talked about it a couple times in the episode here, Ultima is, you know, there's a lot to it that's community. And it is at its strongest when the community is joyously noisy about the about the game and its about the games and the series and its mythos. And of course, finally, there's the Patreon. You know, please consider that as well. Every little bit helps keep the Codex server running, helps get us closer to the point where we can look at upgrading it, and you get access to the podcast episodes a day early. And if we ever start to do anything with video, that'll also hit the Patreon earlier, but we're not there yet. So, all right, guys, it's a good time to say goodnight, I think. Well, don't all say goodnight at once.
Go ahead, Jordan.
Good night, and joy be with you all.
It's been a pleasure as always. If you do not adhere to the eight virtues, then wickedness shall befall thee.
And on that note, fare thee well, and be virtuous.